Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Superman Sunday episode. And today, because this is also a 12 days of the Comic Source episode, I'm going to be talking about a Christmas story. In a Superman comic, basically a book that was cover dated January 1990, The Adventures of Superman, number 462, but which came out at the end of November of that year, 1989, that would be. And it's Christmas time in the setting. So it starts off, and the first page here has four panels, and the outline of the borders is holly and mistletoe, and some silver bells and some nice bows, and it's snowing in Metropolis. There's a Superman ornament at the top. So right away, it kind of sets the mood for the season. We see there's a man on the corner ringing a bell. People are giving donations, and Clark Kent goes walking by. He donates as well, and he's thinking about how much he loves this time of year, such a spirit of joy. And then he hears somebody yelling and complaining, and he's listening in, and he's like, somebody's definitely not in the spirit of things from the sound of it. Problem's about six blocks away. And, you know, he's running into an alley, and he's beginning to change into Superman. And he's probably looking with his, we can't see his head in the panel, but I'm assuming he's looking with his X-ray vision, his telescopic vision. He's, oh, I see what the problem is. It's not an emergency, but, you know, given the season, they probably could use some assistance. And then the scene changes. It's a construction site for some luxury condos. And a couple of the workers are talking, and one of them saying, yeah, the engine to the crane is shot. We're going to have to lower the load back down and send for replacement. And the foreman saying, man, there goes our bonuses. We're never going to finish in time for Christmas. And then Superman flies in and asks to lend a hand, and says, I just need to know where these steel beams go that the crane was pulling up to complete the last couple of floors. So yeah, Superman does more than just bring the beams up. He actually starts installing them, and the workers asking the foreman, you know, what's the union going to say about this? And I absolutely love this answer that the foreman gives. He says, well, we're supposed to work with steel, right? And he's the man of steel, so we're not doing anything wrong. And the worker's like, right. So it's pretty fun. So once Superman is done helping them complete the last couple of floors, they all give Superman their thanks. And when he lands on the roof, he sees that there's a big tree, a Christmas tree up there. He's like, you guys have a tree up here? So yeah, we always erect a tree on the top of a building once we're done. It's an old custom if it's, you know, around this time of year. And they invite him to stay for lunch, but, you know, he begs off, saying he has other commitments. And as he flies off, the men are singing Christmas carols, and Superman thinks to himself, you know, that felt really good, but it seriously cut into my morning. I need to get my hat and coat. I need to get back to the Daily Planet. I don't want to be late for my last day. During this time in the Superman comic, it's Superman's last day, because he's taken a job to be the editor at News Time. So that's why he's leaving the Daily Planet. And on the splash page here, we get the credits. I probably should mention those before I go any further. It's written by Roger Stern. Dan Jurgens handles the art, both pencils and inks. Albert de Guzman is letters, and Glenn Whitmore is handling the colors. So as Clark is landing on the roof of the Daily Planet, he's thinking, you know, it's my last day. I can't believe I won't be working here anymore. You know, the people here become like a second family. Perry, Jimmy, Lois, Cat Grant. And now remember, this is before Clark revealed his identity to Lois, before he proposed. So they're still, you know, competing reporters at this point. She doesn't know he's Superman. So just, you know, keep that in mind. This is back in 1989. So as Clark enters the newsroom, he's thinking about how big a part of his life the Daily Planet has been the last couple of years. And everybody's kind of giving him the cold shoulder as he walks in. He's saying hi to people, and they're giving him the brush off. And then Lois comes over and says, this is for you, and hands him a box. And he said, oh, you didn't have to. And he opens it up because it looks like a present the way she hands it to him. He opens it up and it's an empty box. And he says, hey, this is an empty box. I love this. Lois says, well, yeah, you're going to be cleaning out your desk, right? And then she excuses herself and says, some of us still have work to do. Meanwhile, 1,600 miles away in the West, it's one of Lex Luthor's mountain research facilities. And he's there and he's floating in midair. He's actually the prisoner of the Milton Fine version of Brainiac. And he's saying, put me down. And Brainiac is projecting an astral projection to Lex. And he's saying, yeah, it's not too fun to be helpless, is it, Lex? You know, pretty much felt the same way when you drugged my body and you know, kept my mind prisoner. And now look, you're in the same position. And Luthor's saying, go ahead, glow, Brainiac. My staff's going to notice I'm missing. They're going to come searching for me. And Brainiac's like, I don't think so. You forget, Lex, that I'm in control of Dr. Happerson here. And I also control your entire communication network. And between the two of us, we've actually created a very convincing computer-generated image of you. At this very moment, we're broadcasting some welcome news to your office in Metropolis. And the scene shifts to that office, and we see this apparently fake version of Lex wearing a Hawaiian shirt broadcasting to his staff saying, I'll be spending the next month in the islands and issue holiday bonuses for all the employees. Season's greetings all. And they're like, oh, great. Hey, thanks, Mr. Luthor. You know, thanks to you. It's going to be a very Merry Christmas. They probably know that there must be something wrong because Lex Luthor is definitely a Scrooge, but you know, they're not going to say no to the money if he's giving it out. So that's pretty fun. It's the only non Superman stuff that we get in this issue. I think Stern just throws it in to advance that plot a little bit, but the rest of it is all focused on Clark Kent and Superman. So not much context for that. If you're not reading this era of Superman when Lex was the businessman and, you know, there's Brainiac's in the story a lot in the series, in the title a lot at that time and such. And I really do love this era of Superman after, I mean, I love the Byrne era, but the stuff that came right after a lot of it done by Roger Stern was really great too, because they played the long game and a lot of the plot lines would go on and they'd be, you know, kind of in the background plot lines that would then come to the foreground as the events in them became more important. You just don't see that kind of stuff anymore. You know, now it's 6-issue arcs and writing for the trade and stuff. And so I kind of miss this era a little bit. Anyway, meanwhile, back at the Daily Planet, Clark is packing up his desk and he's thinking about how he fought so many deadlines in the room, right? So many good times and so many good people. And he invites a couple to lunch and they say, nah, I'm busy. And he's feeling kind of down, so much for camaraderie, he says. And Perry comes out and calls him in his office, and we think he's about to get read the riot act for leaving, but Perry actually is offering some words of advice. He's like, your editor job at News Time is, you know, it's a really great assignment, and there's nothing here that can match those challenges. And, you know, unless I retire, but being an editor is not the same as being a reporter. And Clark says, I think I can handle it. And Perry says, no, I know you can. That's not the point, but you are giving up something. I remember the day I gave up reporting for a desk, and I've never forgotten what it's like to chase down a story. And there's not a day that's gone by since that I haven't missed it. You know, you're a really good reporter and you'll do fine. Just, you know, follow your instincts and trust your people. And don't forget, I'm not the competition. Please don't think of me that way. Call me if you need advice. And Clark thanks Perry for, you know, being there for him. And Perry has one last thing that he wants to pass on. And that's, if you ever change your mind and you're going to come back to being a reporter, you know, you come to your senses, I'll skin you alive. If you don't call me first, basically. Am I clear? And Clark responds, as a bell, chief. And so then he walks out of Perry's office and everybody's there. Everybody that was giving him a cold shoulder all day is there. There's a sign up that says, good luck, Clark. And they all yell surprise. And Clark is very touched. And he's like, wait, the cold shoulder, the silent treatment, that was all just a put on. And Lois says, what else? We're really going to miss you here, Clark. You know, you were the best competition a reporter ever had. Cat Grant, of course, holds some mistletoe over Clark's head so she can steal a kiss. And everybody's coming by to wish him the best. Jimmy Olsen shows up. He had been out sick for a while, so I can't remember what happened to him. It's been, again, too long since I've read recent issues. But apparently something happened and probably was a victim of some supervillain or whatever, and Superman rescued him. But he had to show up. He's come back to work just in time to say bye to Clark. And they talk about just what a great time they've all had, how Alice, who's one of the interns there, organized everything. And, you know, she's such an important part of the Daily Planet family as well. And Clark's, you know, again, reminiscing and thinking about how much he's going to miss everybody. And so he kind of goes for a little walk down the hallway, and he stops by the storage room that he always used to change into Superman. And he hears somebody crying, and he uses X-ray vision, and he sees Alice in there, and he sees a sleeping bag as well. So he wants to make sure she's all right. He knocks on the door, and Alice is like, "Oh no, somebody heard me. Who's?" And she calls out, "Who's there?" And he says, "It's Clark, Alice. Lois told me that you organized a party. I wanted to say thank you." And she's thinking, no. And she's trying to pack up her sleeping bag. And Clark's like, "Alice, are you okay?" And he opens the door, and she's, "No, don't come in." And he's like, "Alice, I heard you crying. Are you okay?" She's like, "No, I'm fine." And he says, "Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Are you sick? You know, I see the sleeping bag." And she says, "No, it's not that. I live here." And then the scene shifts to Perry's office, and Perry's in there talking to her. We see Lois, we see Jimmy, we see Clark, and Perry's like, why are you living here? What is going on?" And Alice, you know, obviously ashamed, explaining that she had nowhere else to go. You know, she lived in the same apartment all her life with her mother, and you know, her mother was so proud of her for working at the Daily Planet. It was the paper that she read every day. And, you know, she got her internship there right out of high school, and she always planned on bringing her mother there to meet everybody. But then she got sick, and she never got the chance. And then she died. And, you know, she was in the hospital for a long time while she was sick, like 3 months, and the bills just piled up, and it kind of wiped out their savings. And, you know, by then she was working there full time. And she was just getting by, and she would have managed to keep the apartment, but then the landlord decided to convert all of them into condos and raise the rent, and Alice couldn't even come up with the down payment, and so she basically got thrown out. And so, you know, for a while she got a room at the Y, and she was trying to find another place, but you know, on her salary, it was just too tough. The rents were so high, and you know, you need 3 months rent in advance, you need a security deposit. And so then she looked outside Metropolis at some cheaper places, but then even places she could afford, they were okay, but then she couldn't afford the commute. So she's like, "I couldn't stay at the Y forever, and I was scared of the shelters. And so I, you know, my life was the Daily Planet, and I just kind of moved in. And that was 3 years ago." And they're like, "Oh my God, three years ago." And you know, Alice is kind of breaking down. She's crying, and Lois is consoling her. And Perry's like, "But how did nobody ever notice?" And she's like, "Well, I was the all-purpose intern. I had keys to all the offices. And so, you know, I cooked in the kitchenette, and I showered in the gym, and I slept in the storerooms. And I worked the night shift too, as well as the days, to kind of keep my mind off things. And I kept trying to save money for an apartment, but the rents kept going up, and I'm still paying off the medical bills from 3 years ago." And Perry's like, "Oh yeah, that explains a lot. You were always here, no matter how early I came in. And I joked about you must live here. And you always smiled and kind of laughed at it and saying you had a cot in the storeroom, but I thought you were joking." And Alice said, I had to joke about it. I didn't want anyone to know I was really living here. I was so ashamed." And Lois is telling her, "You know, Alice, this happens to a lot of people. You shouldn't be ashamed. You know, I've seen army widows struggle to make it on the benefits that their husbands, you know, leave behind after they pass away." And Jimmy says, "Yeah, my parents, when my dad was missing in action, my mom would have lost her apartment if it wouldn't have been for my grandparents helping out." And Clark says, yeah. And my parents, you know, they still have a little farm in Kansas, and every year it's either a drought or it's floods. And, you know, I help them out as much as they can, but, you know, it's tough out there. Clark says, I would have helped had I known. And Perry's like, yeah, we all would have helped. We wish you would have said something. And she's like, ah, that's very nice of you, but like, no buts. You're not going to spend another Christmas in that storeroom. In fact, it's time we reminded the whole city what the season's all about. And so Perry calls and asks him to hold the front page, and he writes an editorial, and we see the Daily Planet being delivered later that day. And there's an editorial, you know, right above the fold there that says the giving season. And so I'm going to read what Perry has written in its entirety, and then I'll go back and describe the panels that what's happening in the panels that goes along with this editorial piece that he's written. So it says, for a few weeks every December, we all seem to go a little crazy, or perhaps it's the rest of the year when we're crazy. And this is the season when we regain our sanity. Whatever the case, we all act as if we suddenly found something good in all of us. We want to laugh and sing and celebrate this wonderful discovery. Then comes the first of the year, and the celebrations abruptly end, and we go back to grousing about our jobs and taxes and what a rotten deal we got. But it doesn't have to be that way. With a little effort, we can hang on to this feeling of goodwill. With a little thought, we might realize how lucky most of us are. Look around and you'll see that some of us are not so well off. Some have no jobs to grouse about. Some do not have enough to eat. Others sleep huddled in doorways or over gratings, using copies of this very paper to keep warm. Those unfortunates are our brothers and sisters, but all too often we look away as they pass. It's about time we stop doing that. It's about time we remind ourselves that the shabbily dressed stranger shuffling by is another human being. Maybe he's not a worthless bum. Maybe he just had a run of bad luck. But we'll never know unless we make the effort to find out. Every day, our newspapers and our television bring us news of suffering around the world, and it often seems too much to take. Perhaps that's why we try to ignore the misery that's closer to home. Perhaps we look away out of guilt or embarrassment or anger, and perhaps some of us look away out of fear that little more than a single paycheck keeps us from joining the ranks of those homeless. But whatever our reasons, we cannot continue this way. Precious lives are being wasted, and it diminishes us all to allow such a thing. This is our problem, and we must not run away from it. A frightening, growing percentage of our city's homeless are families, often single-parent families. Imagine what it's like to be that child. Imagine what it's like to have no home for your child at Christmas. What hope is there for these new homeless? By now, a lot of you are probably throwing up your hands in despair. I'm not Superman, you cry. What can I do? The answer is simple. Whatever you can. No one is asking you to save the world, and it's not necessary that you be able to fly. Perhaps people like yourselves are already working with a score of organizations, from the Metropolis Human Services Coalition to the Salvation Army. These organizations do as good a job as they can, but they could do better with your help. The kitchens and the missions work with the most needy, providing food, shelter, and warm clothing. Your donations of clothing can give Christmas to those who would have missed it. Your donations of food can help give homeless people the strength to go on another day. And your donation of time will keep these organizations running, as well as your donations of money. Whatever you can give, whatever you can do will help. But please don't think you can just write a check and forget about the homeless for another year. This is a problem that will not be solved overnight, not even with Superman's help. Some of our city's homeless are tormented by mental problems. It will take an extra effort to win their trust. Others can't turn their back on drugs or alcohol. For them, we may be able to offer little more than our prayers. Metropolis is a prosperous city, but with each passing year, good, hardworking men and women find it more difficult to find affordable housing here. Every year, there are more luxury condos and fewer row homes. This too is part of the problem. We must not forget when January arrives. There are many ways we can attack the problem. We can petition city council to create incentives for the construction of more low and middle income housing. We can donate time and labor to organizations such as Habitat for Humanity or the Bakerline Neighborhood Housing Service, but we must do something. So a pretty powerful editorial from Perry White, and some of the things we see in the panels as we're seeing these words, we see a man reaching out to share coffee. He's reading the editorial and is reaching out to share some coffee, some warm coffee that he has in a thermos with a homeless man he sees walking across the street. We also see Superman going to help a single mother and her child who are out in the freezing snowstorm, and wrap them up in his cape and take them to the Salvation Army, where they receive coats and a warm meal to help bring them some holiday cheer. We see many members of the Daily Planet volunteering at a shelter and feeding food to those less fortunate. And as Perry's talking about those that struggle with addiction, we see Cat Grant out on the street in a snowstorm, trying to reach out to somebody, trying to help, but he's so enthralled with his bottle of liquor, he just trudges on. So again, very, very powerful and relevant, especially at this time of year, editorial from Perry White. And I'll talk a little bit more about my thoughts on it in a minute, but let's get back to the issue. We then see Alice, the intern, in Perry White's apartment, and there with his wife, Alice, and she's asking if she's okay, and Alice, the intern, replies, yes, I guess I'm just feeling a little melancholy. I always do around Christmas. You know, it was my mother's favorite time of year. And Mrs. White says, I understand. And Alice thanks her. Hey, thanks for letting me impose on you during your holiday on such a short notice. And Alice says, please don't call me Mrs. White, call me Alice. Oh wait, that might get kind of confusing. And Alice, the intern, says, well, Mama always called me Allie. And Perry comes walking out of the kitchen with their holiday turkey and says, Allie it is then. And the way I've been figuring it, you've been putting in at least half a shift in overtime for 3 years without any compensation. So I'd say the planet owes you plenty. And Alice is like, or Allie, I guess I should say, it says, but she's just not that type of person that's going to try to take advantage. Perry's like, look, let me finish. I'm going to use that fact as a wedge to pry a living wage out of management for you so you can afford a decent place of your own. And until then, you're going to stay here with us. And Allie's overcome, saying, here with you and Mrs. White. And Mrs. White says, yes, Allie, ever since our son moved out, we have more than enough room. We'd love to have you. And Allie's overcome with emotion, and she gives Perry a big hug. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And Perry, you know, kind of uncomfortable with that. Yeah, you're welcome. Of course, don't even mention it. Meanwhile, a few miles outside of Smallville, Kansas, it's the home of Ma and Pa Kent, and Clark flies in Superman with a bunch of presents wrapped up in his cape. He smells the pie and. He's just happy to be home for Christmas and wishes his mom a Merry Christmas and says, okay, pause in the living room. He has a surprise for you. And Superman goes walking in there, and there's Lana Lang, and she's just out of the hospital. Apparently she broke her ankle. Again, I'm trying to remember what was going on in the Superman titles. I want to say maybe this had to do with the Manhunter crossover, Millennium, I think it was called. And Lana was kind of brainwashed, and because Clark mentions, oh, I didn't know you were here, Lana. It's great to see you out of the hospital. And she says, I just got released and your folks picked me up. And Pa says, yeah, we didn't want her to be alone on Christmas. And he says, that's great. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're up and around. And Lana says, yeah, you know, I've spent Christmases alone, you know, especially the ones right after Aunt Helen passed, and they weren't too much fun. And Superman says, yeah, there's way too many people who never know the joy of the season. They're just trying to find enough to eat or find a place to stay. It's a never ending struggle. And Pa says, yeah, but it's not your struggle alone, son. You know, if there's any purpose in life, it's for all of us to help out each other. And Ma comes in from the kitchen and says, amen to that, you know, and I'm just happy that you're taking time to be with us today, Clark. And so they all toast with some eggnog. And Clark says, you know, here's to family and good friends. May we all keep the fortitude. May we all have the fortitude to keep the spirit of sharing alive all through the year. And that's kind of the message of this issue, obviously, you know, don't just do it at Christmas time. It means so much to so many to have that season of giving extended. And it's what Perry was talking about right in the you know, first part of his article, saying we're either crazy now, or maybe we're crazy all the rest of the time. And for whatever reason, we're reminded at Christmas time that, hey, a lot of us are pretty lucky. We're pretty fortunate. And we need to share that with the people who aren't so fortunate. And so it's, again, it's a very relevant message. The thing that gets me about the issue, you know, like I said, this is from November, December 1989. So 30 years ago, you know, it's cover dated 1990. So 30 years ago. And if anything, the homeless problem has gotten worse. And that's what's kind of depressing and disappointing. And I'm not going to get into the politics of it. Obviously, it's a hard thing to solve. And a lot of it goes to the, you know, mental health issues and drug addiction, and which is kind of linked into kind of the medical system we have, or lack thereof, healthcare in this country. So these aren't, again, easy problems to solve. But if we all come together, especially this time of year, we can help. We can put a dent in these things. But even more than coming together this time of year, to echo the message that Perry is saying in the issue, and that the Kents are saying as they're all together with Lana, it's also important to do it the rest of the year as well. It's not enough to just do it at Christmas. And exacerbating this problem this year, we know, is the pandemic. So many people without jobs, so many people that aren't going to have a very Merry Christmas because they simply can't afford the gifts this year. They can't even afford to pay their rent because they can't go to work because their business is closed, or it's not safe for them, or they've contracted COVID and they're still recovering, or somebody they know who was a provider in their family has passed away. You know, we have over 300,000 people who've passed. So we really need to come together. I know politics is really divisive right now, and people are at each other's throats, it seems like. And I just wish we could leave all that behind and, you know, forget about if you're red or you're blue or who you voted for or whatever. And just remember that, you know, rather than being a Republican or being a Democrat, we're all just Americans. Let's come together. We're all just people. We're all just humans. And we love comics and we love TV and geeky stuff. And we love Christmas. And, you know, there, but for the grace of God, go I, you know. We heard it right here in the story when Perry's talking about looking away from the homeless out of fear, because you're thinking, you know, I'm only one or two missed paychecks away from being there myself. And there are many, many people in this country who for them, that's the case. And that's why with this pandemic and missed paychecks and such, that so many are suffering right now. So yeah, it's a little disappointing that we, if anything, it's gotten worse in the last 30 years, not better. And things may be getting worse because of the pandemic this year. And so it's a good time to remember that we all need to help each other out. Even the awareness helps, but we need to keep that in mind the rest of the year. So I hope I'm not being too preachy. It's just, you know, this is one of my favorite holiday stories with Superman. It's one that I always remember. Because it's so poignant, you know, it's so real, you know, having Alice living in the storeroom of the Daily Planet, things like that do happen. You know, you hear about them all the time, unfortunately, more and more. And so, I thought it was important, an important message to remind everybody about this year. So again, apologies if it's coming across as preachy, but I just want everybody to remember. I want everybody to have a Merry Christmas. I want everybody to have happy holidays. You know, whatever it is that you celebrate, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Festivus, you know, whatever. And I want everybody to be healthy and safe, and I want everybody to read comics. So I hope you all enjoyed this one. I'm going to be doing more of Superman Holiday Stories for Superman Sunday. So be sure you check out the other episodes that are released today. And as always, want to thank you for your support, for listening all year long. Thanks for listening to this particular episode, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.